It's okay. Welcome to the final session of Introduction to Corporate Communication. It's the final session, but it's the big impact one, because partly because by now you know corporate communication, but I have invited some speakers to join me in just summarizing a little bit more of what the world of corporate communication is. So before we get started, I need to remind you of a session after this, and that starts at 4 o'clock. Some of you have already participated in the movie attitude study, where we're doing some research on attitudes towards that sort of thing, and there is a second session today at 4 o'clock. So to introduce that, we have Hannah, who's running this, has a question, right?
Yeah, hi. Those of you who don't know me, I'm Hanna Reinikainen, I'm a doctoral student here at Corporate Communication. And yes, I'm coordinating the movie attitude study, and it's a possibility for you to get a bump up on your grade. How many of you are attending today's session? A lot of you attend it already. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, great. A lot of people. Okay, so join me, auditorium 2, 4 o'clock sharp. So no quarter past, but 4 o'clock sharp. And thank you in advance. See you then.
Okay, so that will, some of them will see you soon. So to start off this session, because we have a few speakers, I should say to you, and some of you already know my story, but the idea is for this session to try to open your eyes a little bit more to this world of corporate communication. Being the final session, this is our last chance to do that before you move on. And to do that, we would like to somehow get some of you to dip your foot into the world of, or the water of corporate communication. And some of you may even want to, after this session, jump into the world of corporate communication as a career. Some of us here who are speaking have built a career in corporate communication, so we can share some stories with you about that. I got into corporate communication as a career many years ago, mainly because I wanted to change the world for good. And through crafting messages, producing messages, communicating messages that are targeted to changing people's attitudes, changing people's behaviors, I was able to do that. And some of the messages ended up in blogs, in social media posts, in speeches by heads of large corporations and politicians, in books, in news reports, on television and newspapers. And all up, I would say the messages would have been reached by probably 5.5 million people. And so reflecting on that, I think I could say that a lot of messages have reached many people, and the feedback I have received from people is that, yes, it has changed their attitudes and behaviors and so on. And so I can say that if you would like to get involved in a career that is, one, fun, and two, helps change the world for good, then I would invite you to open your eyes today to hear what the others have to say. So our first speaker is Hari Saukuma, who is the head of one of the best, if not the best, communication agency, Tekker in Finland. So he's going to talk to you about, from a Finnish perspective, what is this world of corporate communication, and he'll tell some stories about crisis communication, for instance. So over to you, Hari.
You're great. I love this rock star microphone always, if I can choose. Thanks, Mark, for a nice introduction. It's great to be here. Good afternoon to everybody. I left this university in 79. And probably before your grandparents were born, but it's great to be again here in Jyväskylä University. I made complicated arrangement in order to get teacher position here as a visiting fellow, and it finally succeeded. So nobody can kick me out anymore from here. This because I love this situation so much. I have only 15 minutes time. I don't complain. I'm gonna keep my time, but I'll be a bit quick. You will probably get the material later on. There will be also some interaction, and it starts now. Who is this guy? Anybody, any answers or guesses or any opinions? The stakes are high. I promise very beautiful tekir back for the person who can make right guessing. I mean, I need to get address and through email and so on, because I don't have it with me, but it's beautiful. Now, who is here? He's not here anymore. We have lost him. Or if there is somebody who reminds him, it's just a mistake. He shouldn't be here. You can look the next one beside you if there's anybody like looking at that. Now, sorry. He's from Austria. No, no. Some more guessings. I remind you, we don't have much time. Now, who is this guy? Why he isn't anymore here? Must be something to do with the topic. Nobody's gonna get beautiful take it back. Sorry? Great. 6 points. You're gonna get the back. Yeah, you're gonna get the back, yes. But please come to me after the lecture. He's a Neanderthal person. He was here around, not maybe in this classroom, 70,000 years ago. He isn't anymore because we are all Homo sapiens. According Mr. Harari's best-selling book about Homo sapiens, this guy never learned. I'm not asking more questions because you are so slow that we are going to lose the whole time here. So he's not anymore here because this guy never learned communication. Homo sapiens learned communication. He didn't, or this guy. He was very good with all kind of handicrafts and doing things. He was a little bit like Nokia engineers in Nokia times. No marketing, but a lot of engineering talents. So he disappeared. Homo sapiens continued. Homo sapiens used language for what purposes? Any guesses? In 7,000 years ago. Sorry? Sorry? Yeah, you are. That's not exactly the thing, but almost. I mean, according to Harari, of course. I haven't been there as seeing the things. But sex and mating is proposed. Mark Zuckerberg used sex and mating in order to create Facebook, by the way. So you are also in that way in the good tracks. This was the language was used in order to create trust, to do something together. You are of course right. Doing something together to create trust and calculate the trust. It was kind of a social media. The neighbor caves. Maya is not trustful person. Neighbor caves. Matti is a trustful person. And then things could be done together. So it was kind of a corporate communication origin. To do things together in the companies and corporations. So they were building boats, they were hunting huge animals, and they were making wars, they were creating religions, and here we are with the Temptation Island and Facebook. So at the end of this road. I mean, lucky him, he isn't anymore here. So that was the story. And this is the point. To build reputation in corporate communication, you need trust. And the communication is all about trust. And there is a huge amount of trust at the moment in the world, among organizations, among corporations, among politicians. I mean, you don't need to look around. You can see that. But the original purpose for communication 70,000 years, it was creating some trust. This is the situation where we are located, where the corporations and organizations work. Everybody has brains. Everybody has heart. Everybody has their mobile phones. Everybody is a media. It's an incredible different situation that ever has existed, where organization has to work. And they have to build reputation, and they have to have also valuable purpose. They must be able to communicate also this purpose thing much more better than ever before. I normally show here always the picture of my one of my favorite movies, Blues Brothers, but I have no time for that neither today. So, what is crisis then? We are going now to situation where the trust has disappeared. Crisis is that situation where you don't have all the communication with you in the organization, when the core values are under threat. Core values means the greater purpose why companies exist or organization exist. I give you an example. If the health company cannot handle elderly people right way and they are dying there like flies, it happens nowadays. Just read today's Iltalehti, there's a huge story about one company. It means that there are core values in at stake. If the trains are not going in the timetable, it's core values of our national railway company. And also the situation can be very pressurized, like we are writing here in the rally English, and the pressure increases. That's also one symptom. And all the knowledge is not available for the organization, and there is always external environment which make increasing demands for organization. These are the signs that you are in the middle of reputation crisis. And there you have to act. And there are companies which are falling easily in the crisis situations, and then there are companies who are doing this better, and there are companies who are also making their preparedness so carefully that they are not into so much trouble. Preparedness work is more important than the crisis communication as when it happens. Some crises around the world. Boeing. Who has been following Boeing case by newspapers or anything? I'm not going to ask you anything, so you can put your hands up. So quite many. Boeing, incredible case. 2 years, some people in Boeing have been known what is going to happen. You can imagine these discussions in the coffee automats and coffee lines when they are just speaking with each other that when this plane is going to fall down. Tesla, incredible case also, where the leader is the symptom of the crisis or also creating crisis, like this guy Elon Musk is doing. Leaders, company leaders are creating, according very old English research, academic research, maybe for 10 years. I don't know who that did it and what was the result, but I always remember that they said in the research that 87% of the communication crises are created by directors and CEOs of the companies. So if you can eliminate directors and CEOs of the company, you can just have 13% left. Elon Musk made this tweet, and he was saying that he's going to take company private from the stock exchange. Before we are going into his smoking habits, we can leave the stand here, because this tweet, its value was $87 billion. $87 billion was disappearing from the company's value by his own tweet. Then he went to the radio studio and he was smoking whatever there. I don't know exactly what he was smoking, but this was incredible picture, also in the front page of Financial Times. And still the company is still alive, but it suffered a lot. So these are also self-created situations nowadays where the responsibility is not there. Facebook, incredible case also. We are speaking about communication company in a way which doesn't know how to communicate, who is hiding information, who is scrambling in the new and new scandals, who is fighting in the management board. Incredible case. And in Finland we have had some major cases, of course. I'm working in tech here, and I have been working for 11 years. We are specialized with the difficult situation, so I have seen maybe about 100 different kind of major reputation cases. And some of them are very familiar for our Finnish audience who knows Talvivaara by name at least. Talvivaara doesn't exist anymore. It was one of the biggest reputation case. It was one of the biggest environment case. We were with Talvivaara from 2011 till 2015 or 16. We saw everything. But you can say that in the industries like mining, it's quite typical that there's this kind of cases all the time around the world. And that was also one reason for this. Another reason was that also state was putting money in Talvivaara, and that's why all the politicians and all the people felt that they have also right to demand better actions from Talvivaara. Of course, they made huge mistakes, but on the other hand, it was also a lot overestimated in the media, and all of a sudden, all people in Finland were specialists in mining business, and they had opinion or something else about Talvivaara. What I said, everybody has heart, everybody has brains, and everybody has tools to spread their opinions nowadays. Anyway, it doesn't exist anymore with that name. It's called Terrafame. It has a different ownership, and it's doing pretty fine as a mining business with this new company. Then VR Group, the railway company, has been one of the classic cases. Trains didn't go in the winter time, and in Finland, if the trains don't go in the winter time, it means that you are in the core value business, because they should go also in the winter time. They succeeded to make their operations better, but of course they were many years in the situation where their reputation was one of the lowest in the Finland. Not anymore though. They have been going up. Their trains are going also in the winter time. Maybe you might have different experience because you are much more in the trains than I am, but who thinks that where trains are going nowadays better than before? Nobody. There are 2, 3, 1% who thinks that VR is a shit company. Ah, okay. This 30%, 35% has that opinion. Who thinks that VR is a great company? 2, 1, 2. There is 2, but somebody pulled his hand immediately off. Some major cases this year, elderly care companies, Esperi Care and Attendo, all these things are linked with the situations where you have a huge emotional reaction. In Talvivaara case, a huge emotional reaction was from the environment side, and here it's from the people who are worried about their parents and grandparents, and this kind of things where you have these emotional stakes so high, they are very, very, very powerful negative public case, negative reputation cases. And in this case, both companies, Esperi Care and Attendo, they lost their values a lot. They are actually both of them. This is a secret between you and us. Don't quote me, but they are both these companies are now on the sale because of these problems and because of this reputation. This is why reputation matters. Already 3 years ago, there was a research, global research made by Deloitte, which said that reputation is now the most valuable asset, and reputation crisis or reputation situations are the most biggest threat for any company. And that's why reputation matters. Another research from another company just this year told that most of those people who have been CEOs who are fired now, they are fired not for economical reasons, but for ethical reasons. So, if you want to do meaningful work, if you want to do minimal work for communication, please stick in the reputation management, please stick in the crisis communication. There you are now in the middle of strategies of the companies. Reputation is too valuable thing for any company to be lost. And those people who are there, they are working in the C offices of the companies with management teams or even board of directors. Things are difficult where you are in the crisis. Sometimes your CEO can look like this in those cases, and sometimes there's not very much responsible behaving around in the company. They are also stressful situations, but they are also very giving situations. It's exciting life. And I'm sure that you also know that these storms won't settle. They are here to stay, so there will be cases enough. Remember from this presentation that it's not an irrational thing to do. If you work in the reputation management and the crisis communications, you have to always recognize also emotions which are around the cases. That's why communication persons are different. That's why they are special, because they also know how the people will react. And any company has to take account what's the reaction outside, how does it look like, what is the demand which society gives the companies. Now Mark is coming to kill me. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Harry. I feel like this is speed dating a little bit. We have lots of speakers, lots of very... Well, time is important. Rather than speed dating, it's speed speaking. So next, we have someone from Copenhagen Business School, the dean, who is going to talk a bit about, a very challenging topic. I asked him, what does he want to talk about? And he will tell you what did you call it? Can you make it in the world's most dynamic region? Over to you, Gregor.
Well, I'll give you the summary of what I'm going to say. The answer is no. But let me just add on to what Harry was just saying. Thanks, first of all, for having me here. And I'm actually not sure if this mic is working. I can speak without. Is this better? This is better. Super. My name is Gregor. I have a funny accent, but I'm not German. I'm originally from Holland, and I've lived outside of Holland since I was 15. Part of my life, at least 10 years of my life, I've spent in Singapore, where I was deputy dean at what is probably one of Asia's leading business schools. I'm currently dean at Copenhagen Business School, and I'm a corporate communication person. So if everything goes wrong with your CorpCom career, you can still become an academic. So that's a reassuring thing that you can do. What I wanted to just add on is to some of the things that Harry was saying and that I know that you've been discussing with Mark, as in, why does corporate communication matter for somebody who has a degree from a business school? And how is this different if you do that in one of the world's most dynamic regions, which is Southeast Asia, which I happen to know probably better than I know Scandinavia? I'd like to just have... you look at the shoes of your neighbor, please. You can put them up if you want to. What brands are you seeing? What brand is your neighbor wearing? What brands your neighbor wearing? Nike. How many people are seeing Nike in their neighbors? Quite a few. Are there any other brands I'm seeing? You're a Nike lady? Yeah. Let's take Nike. So what did you, do you remember buying your Nikes? Or did your mom buy them for you? You bought them. What did they cost? 80, what? That was a good deal. So he bought his Nikes for 80 euros. What goes into your Nikes? As in, what are they made of? What are your Nikes made of? Yeah. Plastic. Yeah, basically it's plastic. There's a bit of cotton, rubber, and there's probably some production costs as well. What do you think of the 80 euros? How high is the cost that Nike has of producing your Nikes? 20 euros. Who says less than 20? Ah, less than 15. Less than 10. Less than 5, it's about 4 euros. So 76 euros is basically the secret sauce. It's the secret sauce that Harry was talking about. It is the secret sauce that makes, that creates a value increase of multiple hundreds of percent on your Nikes. I'm sure they're nice, but you're paying for a secret sauce. Does anybody hold stocks in this room? What do you own? AMD. Did you make a decent profit last year? Oh, that's not too bad, huh? You can spend it on Nikes and yeah. Good for you. Good for you. Why do you think that's the case? What made them go up? It's relatively straightforward, right? Yeah, fair enough. You might have read, and Harry was talking about scandals. You might have read what is probably the world's largest banking scandal ever. It is definitely Denmark's largest corporate scandal ever. It is also my university's largest scandal ever. And that is the whitewashing of money by Danske Bank. It is my university's problem because we have professors from Danske Bank in our college's halls. We have people teaching from Danske Bank. We have board members from Danske Bank. Great fun. I'll have to ask Harry at some point what we do with this. Anyway, Danske Bank. Anybody hold shares in Danske Bank? Nobody? Lucky you. Because if we just go back to his Nikes, where we realize that the secret sauce is over 90%, that means there's an add-on, obviously, to the value of Nike. Now, if you take everything that Danske Bank owns and put that at 100, just for the sake of the argument, and you now look at what Danske Bank is worth on the stock market, what do you think? Is that 101, 102, 103? What's your gut feel? What do you say? Absolutely you. It's probably less than 100. Absolutely. Because that secret sauce has turned into a toxic sauce, a value destruction. It is about at 2 relative to the 100 that the Danske Bank owns. So the secret sauce has turned into a toxic sauce that destroys about 98% of the value of the bank. Now, this is why reputation matters and why Harry is absolutely right where he says this is a C-suite task. If you cannot explain your secret sauce, you will not be able to create value in an attention economy. If you cannot stop your toxic sauce, you will not be able to stop value destruction in the attention economy. And so this is why corporate communication is a value creating or a value defending a management instrument. It's also the reason why I'm deeply convinced that it should be taught in business schools like this one. It should actually be part of MBAs. And it is something that anybody who goes into senior management should be capable of doing. Now, what is actually different when you do that in what I've called the world's most dynamic region in Southeast Asia? By the way, this is a picture of my old university. And I used to live here. I was quite happy here. So I'm food always works. This is not a very Asian food, pizza, but it's universal. So basically, why is Corpcom a piece of senior management? Well, because it connects the forms of value creation. And it starts with, Harry, what you just said, the embedding in the corporate strategy. If you're not embedded in the corporate strategy, you will never be able to create value, which to me is basically the bottom of the pizza. Only if you know what your company's strategy is, can you be able to add value to that? Obviously, only if you're able to know what your company's strategy is, can you be able to do communication about it, and can you manage its reputation? Only if you know what its reputation is meant to be, can you create content and messages, and only if you have content and messages, can you actually do the actual communicating, the actual producing of messages, the actual reaching out to media, the actual producing of campaigns. What I lament very often when we talk about corporate communication, we only talk about that top piece, about the technical execution and the actual communicating. It's not unimportant, but it's got to be linked to those other layers. Now, if you move to another part of the world, typically your organizational strategy is going to be the same. Nike has a global strategy. Danske Bank has a global strategy. Most corporations have global strategies, so that one's not going to be the same. The reputation is typically also going to be the same, so that's also not going to change. But, and now comes the interesting piece for communicators, can you craft content and messages that are appropriate in other parts of the world while still being in tune with the strategy of the organization? I'll give you an example. I was having Thai food with Vilma, one of your professors here, yesterday. And we drove through an area of Jyväskylä where there were people standing and they were smoking. This was in the middle of the night, or it seemed in the middle of the night. And I'm from Holland, so I make inappropriate jokes. And so there were these young women standing at the street smoking, and I made an inappropriate joke, and I realized it was inappropriate. And Vilma didn't say absolutely anything, right? And the conversation just stopped. And after I got out, she said, "Do you know that in Finland, this is very inappropriate to label people?" And she was very serious about this. And so I thought, oh my God, I mean, this is a country that's like, that's nearly a neighboring country of Denmark, and already I'm getting these things wrong. And so this is why these things matter so much. If you work professionally in another part of the world, and that's definitely true in Southeast Asia, you've got to rethink your ability to make appropriate content and make appropriate forms of communication, even though you might be a fantastic manager. And that's what I want to talk about. So one of the companies that I've had the pleasure of working a little bit with was Microsoft Asia. And Microsoft Asia understands this. They understand, and in fact, that's where they use this pizza metaphor. They understand that some things have got to be constant. The way their strategy is, their corporate strategy is got to be constant. The way they manage their reputation has got to be constant. But the stuff that comes on top is what's got to be local. And they call it the toppings, the last mile execution. The last mile execution needs to be genuine and uniquely local for local customers, for partners, and for spokespeople. Now, the challenge in that is to make it local but still fit your global strategy. And that's not trivial. And not many companies get this right. What does that mean in Southeast Asia? Well, let me first start by saying, and many people ask me to talk about Southeast Asia, the first thing I always say is, Southeast Asia is not a country. So we treat it as if it were a country, but it's not, of course. In Denmark, they do this as well. Can you tell us something about Danish Southeast Asian relations? Well, yes, I can, but we're talking about 11 countries here. And not only are we talking about 11 countries, but we're also talking about the fact that there are more people, and I've actually included India here, which is not entirely fair, but there's more people living inside this circle than outside of it. Anybody that tells you, well, this is how things are in Southeast Asia, please don't believe them. But I will try and share some of the things that make it so hard to have appropriate content in that part of the world. And it goes back to this key relationship. As some of you who have already chosen to make Corpcom your career, you will know that one key, not the only, but the one key relationship is between yourself, the media relations professional, and the media professional. Now, there's one thing on the left side that is uniquely Finnish, where Finland, it typically is the world's best. I know Finland is the world's best on many things, but on this particular thing, Finland always scores the highest, or one of the highest, together with Denmark, New Zealand. You know what it is? Education, that's true. There's another one, but it's linked to that, actually. Any idea? All right, come on, guys. What is Finland great in? Maybe it's like, you know, when you ask fish, how does the water taste? They think, well, what is water? It's a bit of the same happening here. It's media freedom. Media freedom is one of those things where Finland is globally leading, together with other Nordic countries. Now, This is one of the key differences between Finland and Southeast Asia. If you go there as a Finn, you will think that, well, the media are not free here. And I disagree with that. But I will say, media operate completely differently in Southeast Asia than in Northern Europe. The role of the media there is to make sure that society functions, that society is harmonious, and that different groups of people can unite around the goals of the country. Now, again, you can say that from a Northern European perspective, that is lack of media freedom, and from a Northern European perspective, that's correct. But it has more to do with what is the function of media than anything else. And that is a huge difference when you interact with these media people in Southeast Asia. So they basically have all kinds of layers that you'll have to think through, as in, well, what does that mean for professional practices? What does that mean for the media system? What does this mean for the political and legal context? I'll give you an example. Is there anybody from Thailand here? Nobody? Okay, well, so then I'll dare say this now. So if you comment, so the Thai king last week basically fired his concubine. Yeah, I can see you saying, well, good for him, I say. He probably has other concubines as well. But Thai media are not allowed to write about that because that would be lese majesté. Basically, it would be an insult to the head of state. And of course, if you're not from Thailand, you find that actually quite outrageous. But if you are from Thailand, you know what the reasoning behind that, even if you find that extreme. The reasoning behind that is that Thailand is such a diverse country that the different groups don't have much in common except the royal court. And that means there's a sense of, well, we need to maintain stability, and that starts by protecting the royal court. And there's many of these situations where if you don't understand what the context is that that journalists operate in, you will not be able to succeed in Southeast Asia. And I've said this before, so the media's dominant function there is, unlike here, not to critique, but to help build. It's usually created or crafted around media, about nation building. And of course, that is not a surprise, because many of those countries were colonies, except Thailand, by the way. And so these are young countries who say, well, media need to play a part in stabilizing these young countries. Now, what that means is that for most corporate communication people, there's a second type of key relationship, and that is with social media influencers, because they are typically freer in what they can say, what they focus on, and how they say it. So those are the two key relationships that I want to just focus on. And I'm just going to pick three countries here. This is a country I know best. This is the city I've lived for the longest in my life. So on the one hand, there's lots of traditional media there, but, and this will seem strange from a European perspective, all of the media are government-owned. And I can see some of you shaking your head, what the heck? Well, that's just the way it is, right? I mean, and that changes the way journalists operate. We have a situation in Malaysia, which is a far larger country, of course, where there's not so many different media, but also all of the traditional media are linked to corporations that are government-owned. And it's a bit more complicated in Indonesia, which is, of course, a huge country with billions of people and thousands of islands. They have 12 major media corporations, and each of them is linked to 12 political movement and political parties. Now, all of that makes it hellishly complex to operate in Southeast Asia. The upside from a COPCOM perspective is that these are societies, like Finland, that are highly digital. They are, together with Finland, on the highest digitalization level in the world. I'll just skip these figures for Singapore because that's just indicative. And what that means is that you have key social media influencers, and I'm just going to introduce you the major ones. And after I've introduced them to you, I'll ask you is there something that you that strikes you? This is Shashu. She looks fake. She is mostly fake. And she's one of the dominant female social media influencers in Singapore. She is completely out of her mind, but she's also extremely smart. So she's a Mensa member. And, well, so this is a post. I decided to put this in here because she's basically mentioning something that she's showing her car. And she's showing who it's been sponsored by. So quite blatantly. Here's Yutakis. So Yutakis is from Malaysia. And basically what he does is he travels around the world. And he gets paid for that. And then he writes about where he travels. This is Noor. She's from Indonesia. So she does lots of stuff about, this is her, about child and children and families. And basically she goes to shops, buys stuff, tries it out on her kids, and then writes about it. This is Jimmy Boy also from Malaysia. He's mostly about on Instagram and about making videos together with his buddy here. And they basically make travel videos. Do you see a pattern here? Do you see a pattern of what these social media influencers are doing? Do you see any politics in this? They do not touch political issues. Zero. They do not touch social issues. Zero. They do not touch racial issues, class issues, religion issues, zero. Anything that could be seen to be controversial or stir lack of harmony, they do not touch. What that means is that in return, they become highly commercial. That means they operate in a marketing space rather than in a socio-political space. And from a COPCOM perspective, that's actually a useful thing. Because you can make these influencers buy your stuff, well, you give it to them, and then they become part of your social media strategy far easier than in some other parts of the world. So there's a funny combination here. It is harder to get journalists of traditional media to get on board because they are more constrained than they would be in Europe. But these journalists or these influencers are probably easier to convince because there's a number of topics that they won't touch. So they're actually more open to corporate topics. Now, what does that mean? You work at Kona and Kona sends you to, Kona has a large office in Singapore. They have a corporate communication department there. They send you there and you get to do corporate communication for Kona in Southeast Asia. Well, the first thing you need to know is that nobody comes to press conferences. Actually, no one. I know that even in Europe, people don't come to press conferences anymore, but Southeast Asia, that no one goes there. However, there is, if you send media materials, that typically gets picked up one-to-one. Not like in Europe, where the journalists are critical of your media materials, there basically gets into the traditional media one-to-one. Why is that so? Well, because that's also what happens with government media materials. However, and this is my third point there, not so much for side topics. So if you want to do something that rocks the boat a bit, there's usually not that much appetite for that in Southeast Asia because it's got to integrate a lot of people so as to be able to be valuable for journalists. And what that means is that if you're a small organization or a big organization with a small topic, you usually don't get quite through to the media as you would in Europe. I'll just skip this because this is, I just mentioned this before. So how do you do that then? Well, there's a number of things that corporations do that in Southeast Asia. The first thing that they can do is, well, if you know government plays such a key role, well, then you need to collaborate with government in order to get into the media. If you can't collaborate with government, make sure that you collaborate with local communities. Because, and I've just mentioned this, the reason why governments need to be strong is because the countries are so diverse, so as to keep them together. That means you can either collaborate with central government or you can collaborate with local communities. I'll give you an example for that in a second. Or you can thirdly, and I've mentioned this, make sure that your social media influencers basically become your own tool by either paying them or giving them materials. Here's an example from Singapore. The company here is Audi. And basically, what Audi tried to do is come up with a fashion event. This is, of course, not very creative. But other than it not being very creative, it will also fail in Singapore if they didn't collaborate with the government, which is what they do here. Spring Singapore is basically the Ministry of Economic Development in Singapore. And so not only is it not enough to do something funky, halfway funky, it's got to be government-linked so as to be successful in these countries. Here's one of my favorite examples. You will recognize at least one of the ladies in this picture. The one in yellow is Michelle Obama, of course. The one on the right is the wife of the wife of the Singapore Prime Minister. And she's holding this thing. First you could think, what the heck is she wearing? And this is a traditional kebaya, as in. But you can also see that thing that she's holding, the clutch bag, as in it doesn't fit. I'm not a style critic, but even I can see. Well, okay, this doesn't really match. There's a reason why she's doing that, because that bag, as also my own bag, has been designed by an autistic kid. And autistic kids very often have a very good memory. So this kid draws dinosaurs from memory. And she's on the board of the school of that kid. So what she wanted to do is to make sure that the world knows about the artwork that these autistic kids do. So the school then says, you know what, madam, why don't you wear this bag to your meeting with Michelle Obama? And she's a pretty smart and nice lady. She said, well, okay, well, I'll do that. And this, to me, is an optimal example of an organization, in this case, the autistic school, collaborating with government levels, in this case, the wife of the prime minister. Since then, of course, this bag has been sold out, which I think is excellent, because the proceeds go to the school. If you can't get to collaborate with national government, make sure that you can collaborate with local communities. And here's an example from GSK. GSK is, of course, a pharmaceutical company. And in this case, they're collaborating with local mosques. No, sorry, the campaign was about smoking, or rather anti-smoking. And what they decided to do in Malaysia is that they're collaborating with local mosques and basically sending out the following message, that if you smoke before you pray, it invalidates your prayers. I think that's a pretty smart way of setting communication content. And it's certainly one that depends on the collaboration with the local mosques. And I've given you the example of the more commercially minded social media influencers a minute ago. So just sum up, the hard part of working in CorpCom is always making sure that your com actually contributes to the secret sauce. If you work in a global company, that secret sauce is going to be global, but you can't say the same thing in different countries. So you'll have to adapt that. Adapting that while staying true to your corporate strategy is the hard part, particularly in parts of the world that are so complex and so diverse as Southeast Asia. In Southeast Asia, you have a specific challenge that the media context is completely different than what you're used to, but there is a way out. The way out is either working very closely with social media influencers who are commercially minded, or working very closely, far closer than you would be comfortable as Europeans, very closely with top layers or local layers of government. If you get there, let me know. It is, I actually think it's culturally and economically indeed the most dynamic part of the world currently. I can only encourage you to go there, for example, on an exchange, as I know some of you in this room have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gregor. I just noticed that we've had two old men talking.
One and two.
Oh, three. I say that, I noticed that because our next guest to talk is a young, beautiful lady. And finally, what she is going to do, actually, before I do that, after this, we're going to have a question and answer time. So please be thinking of questions you would like to ask these two old men. And ladies, please think of questions that you would like to ask. Make them as difficult as you can. That's fine. I'll pass them on to the guys, the difficult questions. But so the next one will be Vilma Parvilainen, who is probably more like your age, and she is a corporate communication student who is coming at this from a younger person's point of view. So over to you, Vilma.
Is this working? I think so. Hi, everyone. My name is Vilma. And I started my studies here in 2016 in organizational communications, which then became corporate communication a couple years ago. Before that, I studied briefly in London, and now I'm actually doing my master's in politics here at Jyväskylä. I was also the president of Imago RU, which was sadly shut down last spring, but it was the student organization for corporate communication. So I've been here for a while, and I'm very familiar with the studies, and I was asked to speak a bit about my experience now that I've almost shifted into work life, still studying though. I worked in communications now for almost 3 years. I've done two internships, one at Procom, which I'm also going to talk to you about. That's the Association for Communication Professionals. Then I've worked at Savonlinna Opera Festival briefly at the university, and now I'm working at the Ministry for Foreign Affairs, and I'll tell you a bit more about my experience there. According to a recent study that was done to Finnish communication professionals, Procom was one of the companies doing it. The main tasks of communication professionals include a variety of things, from social media to internal communications, writing, and media and stakeholder relations. And when I saw this, I thought that that's actually quite, also what has happened to me. So I've done all of these things in my work experience. Of course, not all of them at the same time, not all of them as much as others, but all of these things have been in some way part of my job when working in communications. So I think this gives you a good idea of what being a communication professional is. So it can be anything from very hands-on writing social media posts to thinking of long-term communication strategies or the brand of an organization. So I thought about how I would tell you about my experience. I thought that maybe best is to kind of just describe what I do in my work. So I did an internship at the Ministry for Foreign Affairs this summer, and now I've continued to work there as a communications officer. And I work in the current affairs unit. So basically, already in the name, it says that anything that is kind of current and what's happening at the moment, that's kind of the communications that I and my colleagues in the unit do. So the ministry, probably most of you know what the foreign ministry does, but basically anything having to do with foreign policy, security policy, Finnish people abroad. So if you go abroad and maybe something happens, then the foreign ministry will help you. And then we have two ministers. So we have the foreign minister, Pekka Haavisto, and then we have development cooperation minister, Ville Skinnari. So in my work, basically what I do, I can't say what my typical day is, because there's no such thing. Every day is very different. But mostly I do social media, so anything from thinking what we should post on social media, if there's maybe a theme day, like last week it was the International UN Day, so I would think what we should post on the social media platforms of the ministry. But it can be long term, like at the moment we're thinking how we could communicate about Finland's foreign policy themes to the wider public so that it would be easy to understand and kind of anybody could kind of read or see what Finland's foreign policy themes are. So we're doing a video series on that. So that's kind of what the content can be. So very current or then very long term. Also, if we have, for example, the foreign minister has another country's foreign minister visiting, we organize the press conference and we handled media relations and the interview requests and those kinds of things. And then currently it's the European Union presidency. So I don't know if all of you know, you should, but Finland is the president of the European Union, or the Council of the European Union at the moment. So my work is related to that a lot too. So all the events, that kind of the ministry is part of. We handle the communications for that, and also are there working on the press conferences and interviews. So I think what I'm trying to say is, working in communications, especially working in-house in an organization, it can be anything from filming videos to thinking about like 5-year plans on what communication should be. And when you're working in communications, you get a good view of what's going on in an organization, because it, at least it should be kind of incorporated in the whole organization. So you get an idea what's going on, what is done in the organization, and you're the one kind of telling about it to the wider public. And that's what makes it interesting to me, because you never know kind of what task you might do. It's also challenging, but at the same time, I really enjoy not always knowing what's going to happen in a day, because the task can be so varying. And I really recommend, even if you're not taking corporate communications as your major, take some courses, because everyone should understand how important communications is. It's a big part of the organization, and even if you're working in HR or as an engineer, you still should understand the importance of communication, because it's everywhere. Like, I hope you understand by now. So yeah, that's very briefly my what I do and kind of what working in communications can mean. Then kind of change of subject to Progom. So one way to get familiar with the Finnish communication field, if you're already studying communications or maybe interested in studying it, get familiar with Progom. So it's the Association for Professionals in Finland. I did an internship there last spring, so I'm very familiar with the organization. And it's a great way to kind of get to know the field and stay on top of what's going on in the field of communications. So there's a bit over 3,000 members. Anyone who works with communications or studies communication can join, and everyone who studies corporate communication can join for free, and you get all the perks for free. There's over 80 events every year, so mostly there's some big events like Procom Day every spring, this big seminar event, but mostly it's smaller events where members go and visit different organizations. It's sort of like if you do an excursion with a student organization. Probably some of you have been maybe with Börssi to an excursion in an organization somewhere. So I like to think of it, it's kind of the same, but in a kind of professional environment. So you get insight into what different organizations are doing, maybe some specific communication cases, and sometimes the organizations come visit the program office, and those are live streams. So even if you're here, you can still take part in those events. And other things that are kind of relevant even when you're still studying are the publications that Procom produces. So they have a blog platform, Viestiat, which unfortunately I think almost all of the blog posts are in Finnish, but there's anything from very hands-on how to film like social media videos to more bigger like opinion pieces or thoughts on current communication cases in Finland or abroad. So I recommend reading those posts. And also there's a podcast, Procast, where different communication professionals are interviewed on their expertise, and they tell about their experience. My personal favorite is it's three pieces or three episodes on crisis communications, where three communication professionals tell about what they went through when there was a crisis. There's the head of communications of Finnair, and then actually the previous communication director of the Ministry for Foreign Affairs telling about what it is to actually be in a crisis, what they did and how they kind of got through those. So if you're interested in learning more about the industry, I really, really recommend getting to know those publications. And if you're interested in becoming a member, just be in touch with the office. And also, if you're looking for an internship, check out Procom's website, because they have listed a lot of good internships. And now I can also plug that I've been an intern there and at the ministry, so both are excellent places for internships if you're looking for one. Yes, I think that's all my quick monologue. So just to sum it up, studying communications is highly worth it. I think even in my very short career, I've made use of my studies. And of course, you won't learn everything sitting here at lectures, but it gives you a great base to go and actually work. And even if you wouldn't become communications professionals, it doesn't hurt to know a little bit about communications. So just do it, I think. Thank you.
Thank you, Vilma. From one Vilma to another Vilma, from one young lady to another young lady.
Oh, thank you, Mark.
You can pass it. We have our own professor of corporate communication, Vilma Luoma-Aho, who's going to now talk about what do we teach in corporate communication here and what do we research here. Over to you.
Thank you, Mark. That's a great introduction. Thank you. So how are you guys feeling? You've had an introduction course, right, for a week? Yeah, well, several weeks actually, but it seems like a lot of work. And this is the last time you meet in person, isn't it, Mark? Okay, so what I have for you guys is a few slides that I think will summarize what we are about, because some of you can actually choose us as a major. And many of you can actually just continue studying our studies until the BA level, because many of them are very open to other people from other disciplines as well. Of course, depending on availability. But here we are. So we're called Corporate Communication. We're called Viestinnän johtaminen in Finnish. And what we say on the website is actually what we think we are. So we talk about how we enhance the success of an organization and their profitability. So we prepare the organization and we take care of the intangible assets. So not the tangible ones necessarily, like the rooms, so we sometimes take about those as well, but just the stakeholder relations. If you were here when we had the first lecture of the introduction course, how many of you were here? Okay, very impressive. You've got great stamina. You've stayed strong through the whole course. We talked about stakeholders. And this is still what we do in corporate communication. There's other disciplines that talk about communication in relationships or interpersonal level, but we talk about organizations and their stakeholders and the employees inside. But let's see who is on the team. This is, of course, a very natural group picture that you see here. One of the beautiful selfies that we put out every once in a while, and some add-ons glued to the picture. But let's start with me. So I'm the chairman, meaning that I'm the responsible one for the discipline. So we try to work as a team. So none of the decisions, and we're working on the new curriculum at the moment. So we're very much discussing with the students and also with all of the group and also external people, so ProCom and others, about what is needed in society next. Then you've heard today Mark Badham, who is our postdoc, and he has been described here as the ghost writer, meaning that he has the most writing experience of the team. So he actually has a hobby. I don't know if he told you, he probably did. Yeah? Smile and nod if he did. Some of you know this, some of you don't. Okay, so he ghost writes books. So basically, if you want to know anything about, you know, CEOs who want to write a book but actually don't write, they'll work with Mark. He knows a lot of backstage stories about things that are not disclosed. Then you've met Chiara Valentini on some of the courses. Smile and wave, Chiara. She's here. She's our new professor. And then we have Harri Saukkoma. You've met him today already. And he is the first of a kind of a visiting industry fellow of the whole University of Jyväskylä. We are so happy to have him. I've actually had people come and congratulate me, Harri, in Helsinki, saying, oh, that was an excellent choice you guys made. And I'm just, yes, we're happy. We're really blessed with the team. And then Gregor Half, the Dean of the Copenhagen Business School, you've seen and heard him today already. So he is our visiting professor, and we're thrilled to have him. Then we have lots of researchers. So Laura Asunta is one of our teachers, university teachers. She's not here because she is in New Zealand. So what we do here, we also do research. So that means that whenever the staff is not here, they're somewhere doing research, and that's actually what we get graded on. You guys get graded on the exam and all the things you fill in. We get graded on the research, how many and how good papers we do. So she has to work on that. And Matias Lievonen, the project guru, you've met him. He's a university teacher here as well. And he's been involved, I think, in 8 different external funding projects. So Matias is really good at thinking of how to monetize this and how to get this into a system that works. Sala Syvänen, she's one of our doctoral students. She's a media expert, so she works for Yle and is now on loan for us to do her dissertation on bots. And you will meet her probably with Mark in the media relations in the spring if all goes well. Kaisa Pekkala is one of our doctoral students. And she's been teaching this course a couple of years back, and she's working on some individual essays, and she's doing her research on employee advocacy. So what happens when organizations actually are in the hands of employees? Like, what do employees write on social media? Then we have Hanna Reinikainen. You've probably met her as well in some of the courses. She's actually the real consultant of the whole group. So she's a doctoral student and working in one of our projects at the moment. But at the same time, she is consulting organizations which YouTubers and influencers should they be working with. And why, if they come up with a really good suggestion of I'm going to hire this YouTube star, why that might be a really bad choice for them. So she knows all about that. And then you've met the lady up front here, Sara Sonninen. So in case you thought you have to be called Vilma to be in this discipline, no, you can also be called Sara. And she's the one running the day-to-day activity of the discipline. So this is your team. Now, if you start to study corporate communication, what kind of courses can you take? Well, you've already taken the first one, almost, because it's the introduction. This is where you hear all about what's going on. Then we have the theories of corporate communication and content production. And this is a course where you actually start to make a campaign of your own. And this is the one that many of our students really like because it's very hands-on. Then we have reputation and crisis communication led by Chiara, which is all about helping to understand what goes wrong when reputation is ruined and how to recover from it. What is crisis communication? How, if an organization gets hit by a crisis, what do you say and to whom? Then we have media relations, which is organized by Mark and Salla. And that tells you all about new media, traditional media, legacy media, how to work with that. BA seminar, BA thesis, don't underestimate this. This will be the best time of your life at the university. I really think this is a great time, BA seminar, partly because I'm teaching it, but also partly because I think that's the time when you start developing your academic brain, right? You have to actually develop it while you're here. Then we have a course on expectation management. And then we have a work-life project where you actually learn the skills, what you need when you get to the world outside the university. And Harri Saukkoma is going to be the one in charge this year with Matias Lievonen for this Työelämän projekti. And I think we have promised that this is something to do with consulting this year. So we're teaching you how to be a consultant because many of you will at some point be a consultant. Then we have change stakeholders and monitoring course, also by Chiara, and we are looking at how to manage change, how to work with the different stakeholders, especially the ones that are not getting along necessarily. And corporate communication strategies, where we actually design a strategy for corporate communication. Digital interaction by Mark was voted DMCC's most favorite course. Yeah, he gets great feedback on his interactivity. I don't know, some of your DMCCs are here. I don't know how you liked it. You liked it? No? Yes? No? They liked it. Okay. Peer review. Here we go. And then we have something that other disciplines don't have, which is obligatory work practice. That means that part of the studies in CorpCom, you actually have to go and work someplace real to complete your studies, which we think is very important for you to get your foot inside the organizations and get some experience. Then we talk methods, MA seminar, and MA thesis. So this is what you're getting. Now, research-wise, we are part of a research team called Digital Marketing and Corporate Communication. And this is because increasingly we are trying to work with other disciplines. We realize that no communication alone can get you everything you need. And no marketing alone can get you what you need. You really need skills from different levels. And we want to do research that is significant. So we work together with Heikki Karjaluoto and several of the marketing researchers. And some of the things that we study here are influencers, social media, advocacy, meaning speaking on behalf of something. So like you are a corporate advocate or you're a brand advocate if you advertise something, for example. Stakeholders. Then our own issue arenas. The newer areas with that Chiara is working on include bots. We always talk about brands, media, new media, social media, legacy media, real-time media. Those are included. Strategic communication. And then one of our topics that's getting a lot of hits is what Matias is doing currently, negative engagement. So when customers get angry, when stakeholders want something, what do you do? Because this is one of the biggest questions that CEOs, the leaders of organizations and brands, are actually having to face. What do you do when people get mad? So I've chosen some representative pictures for you guys. Do you recognize everyone? Yeah. So here's Chiara. She's doing a lecture on, why do we share something on social media? Yeah. She's still studying social media and also the visual side of that. I thought it was a really good picture. And here is a picture of Professor Katarina Tsetsura and myself. And this is from one of the research projects that we have. Now, this research project is a silent one because it's on a very difficult topic. It's on Russian influence on strategic communication. So we don't have a website for that because it's a topic that draws a lot of attention, the kind that we're not looking for as researchers. But we have an ongoing research program. And actually, there is a DMCC student who's writing their thesis on this topic. So if you're interested in strategic communication and misinformation and disinformation and information warfare, we're your discipline. And then there's another research that we have going on, which is funded by the Academy of Finland, and this is about the agency of young people. So are young people in social media, are they victims or are they empowered? And when a brand asks them for feedback or brand wants to contact them, what do they think about it? We are actually just getting out new findings about that, and it turns out that many of the under 30s in UK and Finland feel that brands are not really listening. Even though there's so many different feedback channels and places to give your opinion, they still feel they're not listened to. So that's another project. Then we do a lot of conferences, going abroad and talking about what we know. And then there's a few new books we have out. Osallistava viestintä. This is out. It's actually free online. So if you Google Osallistava viestintä, it's by Kaisa Pekkala and myself, it's out there. Kiara just has a special issue out in Public Relations Inquiry, which is all about what is the future of public relations theory. You know, you need theory to understand practice. You can't just try things out, but you have to have an idea of where to go. And then there is a new book, Public Sector Communication, that's out by me and a co-author. And we talk about intangible assets. So how to work those in different kinds of organizations. And here is Hanna Reinikainen with some YouTubers. Do you know who they are? Yeah, some of you know. I don't remember their names, but they're a couple doing a, I think, family-related podcast as well. And then we do some science communication. What is that? We have to be in the media to talk about this. So if you haven't seen it yet, check out the, I think it was first out last January, we had one of those Doc Ventures shows that I was talking on, which it was dealing with advertising. So that's something kind of interesting for us as well. And then two of our members, both Gregor and I, are part of the highest secret society there is for communication leaders in the world. That is the Arthur W. Page Society. And it's one of those groups and clubs that you only get invited to, and then you have to pay high fees and keep going there and be active. And it's really getting access to all the leaders in the world who are dealing with communication. It's a really unique club. So you guys are very blessed with that you have two in one organization. So that's where the picture is coming from. So this is basically our research and our discipline in a nutshell. Mark, are we moving towards discussion, or is there a specific next thing?
No, this is now question time. We told them not to ask questions until the end.
And oh, wow.
Hopefully there are some questions so that we're going to move on to that. So if the speakers could come here, just in case you get some questions for you.
Just in case.
And these are the only microphones that are working, and if we can't hear you, we'll bring a microphone. So hopefully you've got some questions. I know some have already started asking questions, but are there any others? So now's your chance.
Yeah, no pressure.
Do you have any questions of anyone? Okay, over here. Yeah. So you're assuming that there are times when we should be able to tell a lie. That's a good question. You're asking, okay, yeah. This is kind of an ethics sort of a question.
May I start?
Yes, please.
Because I'm here as communication consultant from my background. Although I have been working as journalist and in the media company director before I started this work in the dark side 11 years ago. So we never advise our clients to lie. But we also say to them that you have to tell things which also you have to tell such kind of things that you don't need to change your story next week. So it's better to start to tell things which you know that they are true, and it's much more worse to tell things which might be different after 1 week. So that's our policy. Of course, and we are very strict. We have a value called brutal honesty in our life. It's in Finnish a little bit better. It's brutaali totuudellisuus. It means that clients should not lie to us. We don't lie to clients. We try to tell them truth, and also when they don't like it, and we advise to tell the truth. But you don't need to tell always everything. There are always things which might be, for some reasons, first of all, they might be still that kind of things that you don't know what has happened, let's say, in the crisis situation. You need 2 days more, you need 1 week more. Or there might be some legal reasons you cannot tell all the things because it may harm you legally afterwards. Or there may be some other things, let's say privacy issues with workers, for example, or whatever they are. But that's our policy. Of course, clients don't need to follow our advice. They can decide what they do. I mean, if they are lying, they are doing that against our advice.
Thank you, Harry. I think Vilma wanted to say something.
Yeah, there is actually a theory in communication that discusses when is it good to lie, and it's the theory of strategic ambiguity. So being unclear on purpose. And there's a lot of research on that, and that theory suggests that when should you be strategically ambiguous, so be, you know, kind of not giving your opinion very strongly, is when different stakeholders have opposing needs and you need to meet both of them. So there is no advice like this is when you lie, but at the times when there is two very important stakeholders and they want something and they're the opposite, then you have to kind of somehow explain to both of them the situation. And those happen.
Okay.
Here's the managerial challenge behind this. Harry has just mentioned one of them, that you, and actually Vilma as well. The rule of thumb, you can say the higher you are in an organization, the more stakeholders you need to manage at the same time. And so what that means is that you sometimes have a protective duty towards some stakeholders, and there are things that you cannot say simply, well, because you need to legally protect the people who work for you. Sometimes you have the situation where you have conflicting stakeholder needs. So that is the actual leadership challenge around lies. The second is your level of agency. Your question presumes that the organization and the individual have the same kind of behavior, but that's not the case, right? I mean, there's multiple contact points of any organization into the outside world, and even if you as a senior leader decide not to lie or at most be strategically ambiguous, you cannot rule out that others do the lying. And that, I actually think, is a more challenging managerial task of making sure that your organization behaves the same way as you want it to. Why does that matter? Because even 10 years ago, you probably would have gotten away with it, but today, not anymore, simply because the level of transparency of what people do has just become much higher because there's many people watching what you're doing and then posting about it.
Thank you, Gregor. Any other questions?
Oh.
Yeah, good question.
It's a great question. Basic one.
Yeah, good one to start with. Any other questions?
We also take easier questions.
Yeah, please.
Do you know why the lying is, by the way, the little bit wrong choice for private life also? Do you know why? It's quite difficult to remember when you are lying. The truth is much more easier to remember. So if you are lying all the times, it's just horrible. I have been trying, but it doesn't work in my private life.
Anyone else? We have 5 minutes. Over here? Yeah.
What is the biggest ethical issue with regards to corporate communication? How would you go about solving?
The biggest ethical issue.
Oh, wow. Okay, I thought we were getting the easy questions now. Okay, well, so...
They are getting worse and worse.
No, but you might not find this a satisfying answer. There are people, and I'm becoming more and more drawn to that argument, that say, well, ultimately, PR is a tool which maintains the hegemony of corporations over their stakeholders. Well, it's not easy. No, it is not easy. It's not an easy topic.
That's a difficult word.
Well, can I say structural? Yeah. I think you're underestimating the level of intelligence of your students. Okay. Let me go back to my argument here. So you can make an argument that in modern capitalism, of which I am a great fan, corporations have a dominant?
Yes.
Corporations have a dominant role, and they have more access to power than many non-corporations do. And you can make an argument that PR, because it manages the relationships of corporations to everything that is not corporations, they repeat that. They make sure that power remains in corporate hands. Now, I actually think that is an interesting debate that we urgently need to have in corporate communication, because it reinforces, it reinforces, it reinforces the dominance of corporate organizations over non-corporate ones. And I'm not necessarily saying that is always bad. In a free society, a society can decide that they want to go that way. But that, if you ask me what is at the core of ethics of corporate communication, that is.
Wow.
Maybe she wants to say something. Do you run into ethical
what comes to mind is working at the ministry, we communicate a lot about human rights and Finnish policies abroad, and we get a lot of comments on why we're not being ethical and why something that Finland or Finnish representatives abroad are doing is not right. I think maybe what comes to mind is that it's important to, well, a lot of them are trolls and people just shouting at us on Twitter, but I think it's important to listen to those people who have arguments, and then it kind of makes us, I think, more ethical when we also respond to those actual questions and actual comments, not the trolls, but kind of also engage in dialogue to kind of talk about those issues so that the public also understands kind of the stances, what we do and why we do it. And I think now that I've actually been doing communications where it's really important what we say, because people will understand things very, very easily. They will understand it incorrectly. So now more than ever, I've understood how important it is to communicating. Also, communicating ethically is really important. So I don't know if that really answers the question, but that what comes to mind is that I've learned that firsthand now working with foreign policy.
That's a very good perspective from a younger person. And
I could say a little bit. It's a great question again, really. When I was thinking about it, what I see at the moment more and more, it's not corporate communication questions which create this problem or this question you addressed. It is the lack of responsibility in the company in generally. And if you are working in the corporate communications in the corporate, which is lacking of the responsibility, either in the board of directors, either in the management team, or somewhere in the company. If the core of the company is rotten, or I don't mean that it's criminal. I don't mean that they are laundering money like in Danske Bank or something else. It can be also that there's lack of responsibility, and it can be ethical problem for the communication, corporate communication function. And there's people who are working in that kind of company, and it can be very difficult also. So you have to also look which kind of company you are working for. And it's not the problem of communication, but it might become very much problem of communication if you have to spread information which doesn't link any kind of responsibility. There are plenty of examples. Boeing was one of them, and WeWork, a company called WeWork at the moment, is a wonderful example. There are these Nordic banks. Many of them, as here was mentioned, there are you can see them around. But it's not the communication, it's the rotten core of company sometimes. Mm.
Yeah?
I can think of an ethical challenge that you guys can change. If you look globally, 80% of...
Thank you. 80% of people working in... globally. 80% of people working in corporate communication are women. If you look at the leadership positions of in corporate communication globally, 80% are men. There's something wrong there, and you can change it.
That's a good point. We've run out of time. These guys usually start leaving now, but you've been very polite. Maybe one more question then. They're not too... Oh, yes, up the back. The question is, why did we choose? Yeah, good. Gregor didn't choose, but Vilma.
I think I knew that I went to work with communications even before I realized that was an actual career option and that was something you could do as a job. So I just knew that I wanted to... These things that I'm doing now, now it's quite hard to explain, but I just knew that this is kind of the things I want to do. And when I started my studies, I just kind of got the words and kind of the concepts that, oh, this is actually something you can do as a job. But I think during my studies, I've more focused on what sort of communications I wanted to do. So I've become more interested in political communication and kind of actually making a difference with communication. So that I think during studies, that's important that you also choose sort of minor subjects that then you can use kind of as your expertise when you go into work life.
I just like change. And communication is a lot of change. No day is the same, and you never know what's going to hit, what kind of opinion is coming, what's the challenge. So that was an easy choice for me.
Yeah, the reason why I said I didn't choose because I'm not formally in corporate communication anymore because I'm dean of a large business school. So I guess I decided against it. Originally because my father wanted me to be a lawyer. So.
Yes, I'm also accidental communication person because 2008, two of my companies, they were almost collapsing over me and bankrupting myself. Everything looked quite gloomy. I had been working as a journalist. I had been working as a media company director. I was a total media person, and I was quite well-known journalist in the 90s in Finland and making investigative stories. So my friend from the advertisement agency called me, or I used to be his client, and he said that we need a communication consultant because in the advertisement agency we don't know what's communication consulting. And I said, well, this is a good idea, but I don't know anything about communication consulting, and I hate communication consultants, I mean deeply. I can say that this in Finnish because I can translate it in English. Mutta mä sanoin tälle mun kaverilleni, että mun mielestä viestintäkonsultit on alkulimasta seuraava olomuoto, mutta ei ylöspäin. He said that, well, come to the teacher's team, we don't tell the client anything. And so I went to the team, that was my first client in 2008 summer, and so that's the way it started. So without this threat of bankruptcy, I wouldn't be here. And without that telephone call from my friend from the advertisement agency. And Tekkit wouldn't exist with 35 people working there and being number four as by size-wise in Finland as a communication agency.
Thank you, Harry. Related to that, I think were you involved in a recent report in a Finnish media outlet about the... Some students always ask, well, is there good money working in corporate communication? I think there was an article in Finland about money or...
A couple of weeks ago.
What was that?
Yeah, so it was about which businesses are the most profitable in Finland.
That's
and actually, Harri was interviewed there, and he's in its communication industry, so consulting is where the biggest money is actually at the moment.
It was incredible fake news, but anyway, I like it.
Okay, we might finish up there. Thank you very much. Please give these guys a big hand. Good luck with your exam.